Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the close of a week. Yet again, here on the Damage Report with me, John Adirola, and joining us, as always, on Fridays to take out the trash and break down the news, Brad Ehrlich.
I am so excited to be here, John. There's nothing I look forward to more every week than the moment after this show when I have nothing left to do for the week. But up until then, what a great descent into the opposite of madness. This sweet, put your seatbelt on, buckle up. It seems safe. People do it all the time, but it's still quite dangerous.
Is there a metaphor for the exact opposite of a descent into madness? There's no ascent into sanity or stability or anything like that.
Here I am.
Work on that.
I feel like transcendental experience. Could you? I don't know.
That's true. Anyway, thank you for being here, and that goes out not only to Brett, to the entire audience. Thank you for being with us as we close out another week that is leading into yet another 3-day weekend. This is just the best month ever. But anyway, before we get that weekend, whether for you it's the 2-day or the 3-day, or especially if you're in the service industry, the not at all a weekend kind, we have a lot to talk about. So over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, we're gonna be breaking down all of what Manchinima have done to us yet again. We've got a SCOTUS decision and Kavanaugh's getting attacked for being a little weenie or something like that. We'll break that down. Nurses being mistreated. We've got Joe Rogan. We've got a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, a new side effect of COVID that's even worse than what I already consider to be one of kind of the worst long COVID symptoms. So, you know, like, stay tuned because it's going to get pretty serious. And then we're going to throw out some trash. And I've got a pretty good garbage person, if I do say so myself, and I just did. So thank you for being with us. And if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. Brett, before we jump into this first story, you look like you have something to say.
Thank you. I just want to say I've been doing these Rebel HQ reaction impression videos. You should check them out. YouTube.com/RebelHQ, Facebook.com/RebelHQ. I've been going after some pretty awesome, awesomely terrible people. So you should watch them. They're funny, they're stupid, they look like this. And I go after Matt Walsh.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I remind you, we had an update before we jump into our first story. So we had talked last Friday, I think it was last Friday. Was it the woman who had put the kid in the trunk of her car? Was it Monday? I don't know time anymore. But so she had been taking her kid who had been exposed to COVID and seemed to have COVID to go get tested for COVID. And she didn't want to get exposed to COVID. So she put him in the trunk of her car, which seems like a bad idea. And they have apparently, at least as of this point, decided that there's no cause for charges against her. It's not impossible that something could come, but as of right now, the actual legal system of America has apparently come out with the same judgment basically that the TDR community did. Stern talking to, a few questions that might be a little bit awkward, but no jail time. So that's probably for the best. Other update is that we regrettably have to say goodbye today to one of our interns, Victoria, who's been working on the show for months and months now, helping to make the show work, helping to produce stories for the show, including on the rundown that we have today. Two of the stories today were produced by Victoria. She's been a big part of the team and is now going to be moseying off down that old dusty trail. But you never know what might happen. We've had people return. I'm seeing Sophie here. Sophie was an intern and now we're stuck with her.
And so you don't even have to develop your skill set past being an intern here. You could be like Sophie and just stay like arrested development right in that college, don't care, long hair, don't care mentality.
Kind of slowly not growing as a person. Honestly.
Yeah, kind of.
No, receding as a person. Yes, receding like a lake amidst global warming. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. But Victoria has been great to work with in our meetings and everything. So we wish her all the best. Brett, what were you gonna say?
She's like going like move on. She's like break. Next one.
Here's the thing. I give a little bit of respect to the like break thing she holds up, but when it's to cut us off from insulting her, no, you're biased. I'm gonna insult you double now.
John, it's anyway. Fine. We have one more minute. One more minute of insulting her, and then we'll wrap.
Well, with that, that is all the time we have for that. But anyway, if you can, you know, like the thing, blah blah, share the tweet. Anyway, with that, let's jump into this first story.
These bills help treat the symptoms of the disease, but they do not fully address the disease itself. And while I continue to support these bills, I will not support separate actions that worsen the underlying disease of division infecting our country.
That right there is Senator Kyrsten Sinema putting on her most like gravitas laden tone so that you know that I'm serious. I support these bills. And by these bills, she means all the various attempts to stop insane, out of control voter suppression that's been passed in a number of different generally Republican controlled states, as well as takeovers of county election boards, changing the role and powers of the Secretary of State, effectively making it more difficult for people to actually participate in more in American democracy, and easier for Republicans to overthrow the results of elections that they don't like. She supports those bills, except that she is unwilling to do anything to actually get them passed. So you get to decide for yourself what that support is worth. But effectively, what she is announcing in that speech, and we'll give you more, is she is again not going to do literally anything to reform the filibuster. She's not even going to demand that they filibuster when they filibuster. It's just all free. And so we'll have more of her explanation there. But Brett, what are your initial thoughts?
It is so, I agree with her that her actions and what she supports does not treat or cure the disease. And the disease is disfiguring. It is causes mutations and really disgusting, disgusting side effects. And that disease is when people get elected pretending to be one thing, a voice of the people. And then they, the same people who you see in photographs with a ring that says F off, suddenly when they think they have to give their big voting rights and protect America speech, show up before the Congress, before the Senate to make speeches with their Jesus cross out of their shirt and their breathy affect, and then have completely metamorphosed into somebody else. Someone who instead of fighting for the people they said they were gonna fight for, instead they defend the moneyed interests that they actually care about. There have been so many amazing moments. Like, she has in the past been wildly against the filibuster. Like, she has. She's a different person now. You've changed, bro. You've changed.
Yeah. Well, and she's changed fairly rapidly, because as Public Citizen points out, we're old enough to remember a whole month ago when both Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin voted to make an exception to the filibuster for the debt ceiling. That exception, that carve out for the debt ceiling vote is one of literally dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of times the filibuster has been changed and amended and altered over time. Over a long period of time, but not as far back as they like to pretend. Joe Manchin literally just stated that it's been around since the Constitution was written. That's simply not true. Honestly, he seems fairly ignorant. It's possible he doesn't know that. It ain't in the Constitution. It's just a rule, and it's a rule that's been changed so goddamn many times. But anyway, she has more to say, trying to make her case or, I don't know, gloat in front of the donors. I don't know what the point of this speech is, but here's what she had to say.
The debate over the Senate 60 vote threshold shines a light on our broader challenges. There's no need for me to restate my longstanding support for the 60 vote threshold to pass legislation. And there's no need for me to restate its role protecting our country from wild reversals in federal policy. It is a view I've held during my years serving in both the US House and the Senate. And it is the view I continue to hold. It is the belief that I have shared many times in public settings and in private settings.
Okay, so first of all, the fake I'm about to cry quaver to her voice is so incredibly condescending. Stop pretending that this is like some honest thing. My longstanding support, no, you didn't. You did not support the filibuster before. You have changed over time. Stop pretending that this is you revealing some longstanding, deep, passionate commitment you have to some rule that you don't seem to actually understand. But before we move on with more criticism, I want to make sure that we understand one thing she did there, because unless I'm wrong, she didn't use the term filibuster. She keeps using this other term, the 60 vote threshold. So do you get the sleight of hand that's been done there? It is no longer about a filibuster, because a filibuster, of course, is supposed to be, if you believe in tradition and all that, an active thing that is done. You filibuster by actually literally filibustering, the definition of the word. You keep talking, you hold the floor, and you hold potentially the attention of the nation. And that can be good for you if your position is just, but if not, it would be damaging for you. But we don't have that anymore, according to her. We have a 60 vote threshold. So you do not need to filibuster. And by the way, you don't. You just haven't had to for literally years and years. Just everything only gets passed if we get 60 votes to avoid wild reversals in policy. And so instead we have the status quo, which is no policy for anything that ever gets passed. No reversals, also no versals. You never do the first thing, so how could you possibly reverse it, Brett?
So first of all, the definition of filibuster is to act like a pirate. So it doesn't mean to talk. It just means to act like a pirate. It's an
old, I would accept that,
Dutch rooted word meaning to act like a pirate. And that is accurate. You take the, here's the flaw in our logic, is that we need such a majority of Americans to be in favor of something that it translates to the Senate being 60% in agreement on a fact. That is not the case. That would be awesome. I would be for your whole filibuster thing potentially if the people's opinions were reflected in Congress. But no, the reason that they want to change these voting rights laws and other laws, other policies in America is because 80, 90, 70, 55 to 60, oh, in many cases, 70-ish percent of America is in favor of a policy. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't even meet the 51% threshold in the Senate. That's what's messed up. That's where her logic breaks down, because what she's saying, we need to have more unanimity and we need to have more agreement in Congress and unity. The America's behind you. America's never been more united. It's the thing they're most united against is you failing to represent most people's opinions in policy. That's why we're mad.
The division is between regular people and their elected representatives.
And the reason that she changed it to 60 vote, we have cloture. This is cloture reform.
Yeah.
Cloture is what they're talking about. And no one knows what the hell that is. Cloture is like saying, instead of playing the basketball game, let's just decide who won. Let's just do a forfeit. Filibuster is let's play the game. Let's hear you filibuster. I want to hear what you have to say when you're talking against voting rights. I want to hear what you have to say when you're trying to charge grandma and grandpa more for prescription medication. That's what I want to hear you say it. Because I have video of Ted Cruz literally reading Green Eggs and Ham on the Senate floor when he tried to filibuster something. Yeah. And it's ridiculous. And it's
Why does she not require that? Why does she not at least require that they actually filibuster?
Aaron Burr is responsible for the original filibuster. She's against Aaron Burr.
She has no interest in the tradition. So the tradition is that you actually filibuster. Oh, one of the traditions, by the way, for literally decades was that to break a filibuster required 2/3 of the Senate. It wasn't 60 votes. It was 66, or technically, I think 67 votes. So why did they lower it? Why not put it back at 67? I mean, that was the tradition.
Or if you admit
that if you can lower it from 67 to 60, why can't we lower it to 59 or 55?
Yeah.
Or 50. Why?
And here's why. I'll answer your question. It's because 60 got too annoying for senators. Senate, that's it. It got too annoying. They're like, all right, this is ridiculous, even for us. And that's the problem, is the senators have such a high tolerance for stupidity and wasting our time and wasting our good faith and wasting our votes, that it takes that much to change it.
Yeah.
And one way we can make life annoying for senators is to vote against the ones who are against cloture reform, and to vote against the ones who get into the office like Kyrsten Sinema and then completely change their positions in ways that are counter to why we put them there in the first place based on their promises.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we've raised now several, I think, good questions that she does not address. She doesn't also address the fundamental question of why a party can take control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency and still be unable to literally do a single thing. I would love to know that, why she thinks that She's talking about the radical reversals. Why is it not possible for there to be any reversals? Like, if over the course of multiple electoral cycles, the people clearly shout out, we don't want the Republicans in charge anymore. So we're gonna give you the House. And then the next time we're gonna give you the presidency, we're gonna give you the Senate. Hell, we're gonna do it by giving you 2 seats in Georgia, which you didn't think was possible. And we could do all of that and you still can't pass a single thing. Why is that acceptable? But she doesn't explain that. Despite, as Ari Berman points out, her and Manchin represent 2.8% of the US population. 2.8%, but they're in charge and they are effectively in charge. I wanna play one more video from Curse of Cinema, so buckle up.
I share the disappointment of many that we've not found more support on the other side of the aisle for legislative responses to state level voting restrictions. I wish that were not the case. Just as I wish there had been a more serious effort on the part of Democratic Party leaders to sit down with the other party and genuinely discuss how to reforge common ground on these issues.
If you don't follow politics every day, it may not be clear to you how intentionally, like, she is spitting in your face. Like, the Democrats have not done enough. After the Republicans tried to steal the last election and then went around the country making it virtually impossible for Democrats to win in those states, why didn't the Democrats sit down with them and convince them to stop making it impossible for Republicans to ever lose? That is very much the Democrats' fault. It's madness. It's coming off of the end of the Trump years. She knows that what she's saying is absolute madness. She knows that it doesn't matter if anyone in her district still likes her. By the way, the last poll showed it was less than 1/4 of Democratic voters in her state want her to be the candidate the next time around. But she clearly doesn't care. And so she can say, I almost swore, she can say stuff like that, knowing how insane it is.
She wants to talk, I wish we could get more people on the other side of the aisle to agree with us. Because and then she says, because she believes in the aims of this type of legislation. That doesn't bear out, that doesn't pass, you know, I believe it when I see it. And the only thing I see in the meantime is that Kyrsten Sinema, before giving a very intense curtsy dip, thumbs down to minimum wage, wants Mitch McConnell to see that she's on his side for it. She voted against that. She voted against something that even Missouri, which has turned pretty damn red, has voted for when asked to Missouri.
Yep.
Down. What do people want? Long hair, don't care.
Mama needs wine.
Yeah,
girls, that's all it is. Yeah,
it's so sad. Like, I want to see what she did after that speech. Like, after that speech, she went back and she put on her F off ring and she was like, you know, sangria time.
Something equally, she blended a kitty. I don't know. She's not a like normal human.
Because the last time she left and went away from having to do her responsibility, she went to Arizona State University to go teach a class on fundraising.
Yeah, well, she also took a trip to Europe and refused to tell anyone what country she was going into to fundraise off of. We don't get to know her constituents. She can just go and fundraise and meet with, I don't know, fascist parties in European countries. I have no idea, because she doesn't feel like she needs to actually represent anything. Now, really fast, she gave that speech and apparently it was just as Joe Biden was headed to Capitol Hill to meet with senators to convince those who are opposed to reforming the filibuster to change it. The White House was reportedly blindsided by the move that she would speak out against their priorities when she has been saying over and over that she doesn't care if he literally never accomplishes another thing for the rest of his presidency. Give him 2 terms, give him no accomplishments, she'd be fine with that. And now Biden says he's not sure about voting bill's future. Really? Because I feel like I am, but what do I know? Let's go to a little bit of Joe Biden explaining sort of what he thinks the path forward now will be.
If we miss the first time, we could come back and try it a second time. We miss this time. We miss this time. And the state legislative bodies continue to change the law, not as to who can vote, but who gets to count the vote. count the vote. Count the vote. It's about election subversion, not just whether or not people get to vote. Who counts the vote? That's what this is about. That's what makes this so different than anything else we've ever done. I don't know that we can get it done, but I know one thing. As long as I have a breath in me, as long as I'm in the White House, as long as I'm engaged at all, I'm going to be fighting to change the way these legislatures have moving. Thank you.
Brad, do you know what that is? That is the Ted Cruz school of, no, I'm still strong. I'm strong because I say count the vote loudly. I didn't do anything to stop her from effing me over. I'm not even going to name her or Manchin or the others. But don't worry, we didn't get it this time, but we'll get it next time when I will do absolutely nothing different. Nothing to change the circumstances that have stopped us from being unable to pass this bill. And so they didn't pass it now in the same way that they didn't get the reconciliation bill. And they just keep saying next time we'll get it. They never explain how that's supposed to happen.
This is why people are disillusioned with the entire process. I mean, yeah. I would say that he's, I still think that Joe Biden can beat the hell out of Ted Cruz in a fight or pretty much anything. Like he could still beat Ted Cruz in everything except like a jowl off. But like Joe Biden, and he sounded tough, except what he was saying. I don't know if this will work. And we'll keep trying. Like the words, count the vote. I thought that was a powerful moment of the speech. And I thought he put it forward, the argument, pretty well. It's just that he doesn't go win. He beat Trump. Awesome. I'm very happy about that. And he beat it with a lot of promises. And I understand that this is a wildly uphill battle. If they're looking for like some kind of proof that they need to do something when they get elected and follow through on the promises they made, just look at everybody's reaction to that moment. Everybody who matters, everyone who's affected by this, none of them are like, totally nailed it, Joe. Yeah. You can't go in saying like, it's like going in to rob a bank and saying, you don't have to give me the money, but I really want it. Go take the money, yeah. Find a way to get the money. He just doesn't do that.
You get dragged out of there by the cops and you're like, okay, so I didn't get the money this time, but maybe I'll get it next time, you know, maybe. It's about counting the money, Yeah.
He's right. I mean, that's the way that the right always tries to mess with democracy. Some ticky-tack BS rule that they were changing because they got a good minor league squad.
I get it. Yes, he's right, but I don't care because he's not going to do anything with him being right. Yes, he acknowledges a fact that we all agree on, but he is in a position of power to potentially do something. He refuses to. So at a certain point, I stop caring if you agree with me, if you're the one that's got the only chance of changing things and you refuse to. Now, we're going to take our first break. We come back. SCOTUS decision to discuss. We'll have it for you after this. Okay, let's jump into it. Take a look at this.
Forward, so 10 million healthcare workers do have to get vaccinated if they wish to keep their jobs in a covered facility, which is really unfortunate given the massive shortage that we have of healthcare workers right now in our hospitals.
Yeah, with no help from Brett Kavanaugh, I notice. Cringing little liberal. Yep, I'm sorry, I'm not right. Going to ask you to respond to that. So
cringing little liberal. You don't have to respond. I mean, that just organically slipped out. I can't believe I said that. It wasn't in the teleprompter at all. That was just me being real and authentic and natural. Wait, I think we have the laugh again. This is a normal laugh right here. We have the video.
You want to see this?
That's second. Fine. Anyway, thank you, whoever it is that punked me. So what he's frustrated about right there is probably lots of stuff having to do with his life and his past and all that. But it's manifesting as frustration with Brett Kavanaugh, who sided with the liberals. It says in the video, those that we do, sided with the liberals on one of the two aspects of the mandate, which is commonly called the vaccine mandate, but I will once again pointlessly remind you that from the very beginning, it is a vaccine or be tested mandate. And the entire country is engaged in a collective game of pretending that it's just a vaccine mandate. Is that not the most frustrating thing in the world? They keep saying, how dare you force us to get vaccinated when it does not require them to get vaccinated.
It's
months of this now.
It's just a safety mandate. It's a safety mandate.
It's a testing mandate.
It's about knowing whether you have a safe workplace mandate. That's it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a wildly liberal approach that Kavanaugh had to the situation. Kavanaugh was like, well, if the government pays for this, then you have to abide by government rules. Done, finished, end of story. That's it. And they said, if you privately pay for this, then you abide by the private rules. That's the difference in my reading of Brett Kavanaugh's two decisions. And it's totally in line. And this is what ends up happening when you get like with the Supreme Court. Everyone thinks it's like, we got him there. He's going to give me what I want every single time and he'll find a way to do it. But then these weird things kind of end up, but you know, hitting them, stabbing them in the back a little bit. But yeah. At least it's consistent. I disagree with it. I think there's tons of federal regulations that are put in place by the executive branch that everybody abides by. And private companies have to abide by them too, because they have a public safety implication, whether it's EPA regulations or pretty much anything else that keeps people safe.
Well, and just to be clear, I assume that most people know this now since it came out yesterday, but there was two decisions. The overall vaccine or test mandate has been knocked down for private employers, but for healthcare workers specifically, the vaccine or test mandate has been retained. And that is what caused Tucker Carlson to absolutely lose his mind and call Brett Kavanaugh a cringing little liberal and then laugh like a madman. So that the rule, by the way, which like it had been challenged so quickly that it hadn't even gone into effect now. More than 80 million people would have been affected by the mandate that they're knocking down with, again, just utilizing the conservative supermajority that they have. Get ready for more 6-3 decisions, because they have control of the Supreme Court. It matters whether you control the Supreme Court or not. And you very much should prioritize control of the Supreme Court when deciding who to vote for president. Don't forget that. But anyway, OSHA believes that 6,500 lives could have been saved if the vaccine or test mandate had been allowed to continue. 250,000 hospitalizations too over 6 months. And now we won't have it. But it's good because they're knocking down this vaccine or test mandate, but we've been doing really well recently with COVID anyway. So I think we can afford to take this hit, Brett.
I don't know. I feel like there's a way to find what's that?
I said we're rocking the response right now. What's the
difference? We're not rocking the response. I don't know. I have such COVID fatigue, and I realize that I have and where the rubber meets the road here is the luxury I have to work in a job in an industry where I don't have to be around people. There's a tons of reasons why I love that. And there's more industries, more jobs in America where you have to be around people. And the reason government is to keep people safe and to protect the country. That's how health, safety, human rights, defense of human rights of the citizens and everyone in the country putting together laws that protect people. That's the government. And this seems like a role for the government. And I think there could be more caveats, like 100 people, if they don't all work together. If you have a workplace where people get together and congregate, you could refine that rule. But there's nowhere to go if we're this far down the road of 6-3 Supreme Court, and you'll see decisions like this. And another thing that's worth pointing out is it's never going to be good enough for Tucker Carlson, whatever the people in the Supreme Court do. He's tried along the way to try to, you know, exert. He still has this like phantom elitism syndrome, this phantom Swanson broth air syndrome, where he thinks that there's, you know, he cut off that limb, but it still kind of used to kick in every now and then. And he would exert some kind of, hey guys, wait a minute moment. That's gone. It's too far. It's the goal is to go just as far as his audience wants him to. And his audience never wants him to stop. And he's going to do that. And then it's to show how weak everyone else around him in his own party is. If you're getting beaten and muscled out by Tucker freaking Carlson.
Yeah.
You are wildly, stupidly failing. at everything. The only person who's stronger than Tucker is Donald Trump. And the weakness in this, you know, epic battle between the two of them that will cause the downfall is Donald Trump's vanity when it comes to mandates. That's his hubris. His hubris is, this is my vaccine. Mm-hmm. And he's going to tell wildly anti-vax people who don't want any more information that they should get the vaccine, even if it's not a mandate. And that's how Tucker's just going to keep driving a wedge and try to win.
Yeah.
And if he fails, he's going to pivot in a way where it's like, I wasn't even trying. That's also another frustrating thing about Tucker's approach.
Yeah. And his audience will be fine with it because he doesn't, again, they have trained their audience to not expect consistency. And so you try out things, and if it doesn't work out, you just discard it. Really fast, you should also know that while this case is being argued, two of the lawyers arguing the anti-vax case had to do so remotely because they failed their COVID tests that they were mandated to take, as Ellie Mistel, friend of the show, points out. Good that they had to take the test because, you know, they might have exposed the Supreme Court to COVID if they hadn't been tested. So it's good that the Supreme Court has that protection that they're now denying to 80 million workers. By the way, Ellie Mistel, who wrote that, also points out, I want everybody to remember that the Supreme Court has said the government doesn't have the authority to make people wear a mask when it later says it does have the authority to force women to give birth against their will. Very good point. Let's jump into one more quick story in this block. From the very beginning of the pandemic, look, we've all been suffering. We've all had a difficult time. Working in almost any industry is tough, but being a doctor or a nurse in these times with so many constant waves, being exposed constantly to COVID, to so much sickness, is tough. They've had it tough, and it has not gotten much easier. In fact, now many nurses in a number of different states are being asked to use their sick days or vacation days for the days they're required to quarantine for the COVID that they are effectively guaranteed to get because there's no rest from the exposure that they'll have. Nurses at hospitals in Maine, Florida, Missouri, California all said they have to use their personal paid time off if they test positive. And so they're also, some of them, being told that if you test positive but you're asymptomatic, do not use your personal time off. Don't use any time off. Come into work because so many of you have been burned out and retired or are sick and taking time off that are not asymptomatic that we just need to roll the dice with people who are asymptomatic, but still potentially spreading COVID to the people that come in. I guess the only solace we should take in this horrible situation, Brett, is that the likelihood of them spreading it is low because virtually every single person they're going to interact with in the hospital is already going to have COVID.
I do not envy the task of being a medical professional in a time of COVID. Even if you're just seeing patients that aren't in the emergency room or people who are in the ICU, like, you're in a building where COVID is going to happen. And so people in all kinds of industries where you have to interact with a lot of folks on a daily basis, personally, physically, in the same location, they're wildly fatigued. And also, a lot of them get sick, and then they articulate this to the people in charge of those businesses and those industries. And somehow, wouldn't you know it, those businesses and industries come back with things that aren't best for their employees and aren't best for their health, but are best for the industry. Best for the bottom line of someone who is sitting there in their mansion or their private jet or their personal Delta airline flight chamber. And they are able to just say, no, you guys incur the brunt of this because I am your feudal lord and you are my serfs. Mm-hmm. That's how it all comes down. And it's sad that the money comes down to where the money's at. And frequently there's a lot of folks who are the mouthpieces of the right who are pretending that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And that's what's wildly stupid about it. When I say you should wear a mask, I'm not saying I want everyone's face to be covered at all times everywhere. I'm saying wear a mask at a time when it reduces the transmission because 900,000 people have died. But I'm saying you should get a vaccine because it reduces. I'm not going to say because I want vaccines in everybody's system. I'm saying you should get a vaccine because it reduces hospitalization, which is going to lighten the load on people in the everywhere else. And those are real conversations. And then you see like hate lords like Jimmy Dore retweeting things that in the article he's tweeting about vaccination rates versus hospitalization rates. Disproves the very point he's trying to make and proves the point that I'm trying to make that you should get vaccinated because
but how would you know that unless you've read the article?
That's why I saw Dan Evans from the internet tweeted like screen caps from an article Jimmy Dore shared today. And it was fantastic. It's like when you have a place where 97% of people are vaccinated and 3% of people are not vaccinated. And then hospitalization breaks down 50-50, people who are vaccinated versus people who are not vaccinated. That proves mathematically that the vaccines reduce hospitalizations.
But it requires at least a minimal understanding of statistics.
Yeah, and that understanding is if it was just as likely that you would be vaccinated and hospitalized as unvaccinated and then hospitalized. Then if 97% of the people in the population were vaccinated, then 97% of the people in hospitals for COVID would be vaccinated. But that's not the case.
Well, that is all the time we have. We got to take our second break, but come back. We're going to be talking about Joe Rogan being exposed to some accurate information. We'll see how he responds to it after this. Okay, with that, let's jump into hopefully these two topics in this period of time. During the Wednesday edition of his podcast, Joe Rogan denied that the condition known as myocarditis is more commonly a side effect in children who have had COVID-19 and not more commonly a side effect of getting vaccinated. So he was fact checked about that. Let's see a little bit of that.
For young boys in particular, there's an adverse risk associated with the vaccine. It's like a 2 to 4-fold increase in the instances of myocarditis.
Yes, but you know what?
Hospitalization.
You know that there's an increased risk of myocarditis in among that age cohort from getting COVID as well, which exceeds the risk of myocarditis from the vaccine.
I don't think that's true. I don't think it's true. No. I don't think it's true that there's an increased risk of myocarditis from people catching COVID that are young versus increased risk of myocarditis from the vaccine.
No, there is. There's both.
Well, let's look that up because I don't think that's true. Myocarditis more common after COVID-19 infection than vaccination. But is this with children? We're talking about young people.
Men and boys aged under 30 after this is what it says here.
With children is the issue.
Well, no, we were talking about 15-year-olds.
Well, we're talking about young children.
Male child. 12 to 17.
12 to 17, more likely to develop myocarditis within 3 months of catching COVID at a rate of 450 cases per million infection. This compares to 67 cases of myocarditis per million at the same time following their second dose of Pfizer.
Yeah, so you're about 8 times likelier to get myocarditis from getting COVID than from getting the vaccine.
Yes, and in both cases, it's very unlikely. So look, he got fact-checked in real time. We don't have more of the video where he starts to question where the information is coming from. What you are effectively seeing is a demonstration in real time of the human predisposition to readily accept information that comports with what you already believe about the world. And if something disagrees with it, you instantly begin to try with whatever mental capacity you have to throw up roadblocks to it, obstacles, reasons to not have to change your worldview. Now, he seems in this particular case, although initially was highly resistant to accepting this information, he tweeted, obviously, I have no idea what is right, which is just a great thing to say. But the article I posted was what I was referring to. I'm sure I'll stumble again in the future, but I honestly do my best to get things correct. And look, on this topic, he seems to be admitting that he was wrong. Will he remember that he was wrong and accurately recount this information in a week? I don't know. But to say as a general rule that he just honestly tries to do his best to get things correct, do we need to go back through all of the just specifically medical misinformation that he has willingly spread and never corrected throughout this pandemic? I mean, we're fresh off of the mass formation hypnosis debacle of the past week. Totally made up nonsense that has like raised his profile over the past week. Has he done a show where he's admitted that the guy just made it up and there's no reason to believe that? It's highly dangerous to spread that misinformation? No. So you can say that you're just doing your best to get it right and all that, but you choose your guests. You choose to bring on people that have a known track record of lying. You don't readily accept fact checks, not as a general rule. It's certainly not part of the mission statement of your podcast. So it's just frustrating to see that we have decided as a society to lift this guy up above virtually every other potential source for either information or entertainment. And he has such a tenuous attachment to reality, to scientific fact. I'm just getting so sick of every time I see his name pop up. I know it's going to be in relation to something that makes our world worse.
I applaud Joe Rogan for this reluctant, albeit reluctant, acceptance of reality. It is.
Will it last?
As John. Oh no, no, no! As John pointed out, this is the exasperation I feel. It's when Joe Rogan says, "Man, you just gotta question sources, dude. You gotta ask the right questions, because you're just gonna take something as given." He just takes as given things that are, you know, go along with his confirmation bias, as John outlined. That phenomenon of, you know, you're biased toward confirming things that you want to confirm.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan, a 16% higher risk for getting myocarditis. This is from the CDC. You have a 16 time higher risk of getting myocarditis if you have COVID than if you don't have COVID, right? Just random person without COVID, random person, 16 time higher risk. According to the CDC, 150 cases out of 100,000 patients with COVID, right? Myocarditis. According to a study in Israel, out of 2.5 million vaccinated people, 54 cases of myocarditis out of 2.5 million. So if you get COVID, the math shows you have a 0.15% risk of getting myocarditis. If you get vaccinated, according to this Israeli study, you have a 0.002% chance of getting myocarditis. And to paraphrase Jordan in the chat, what's bigger, 0.15 or 0.002? That's the end of it.
Yeah.
That's the end of the discussion. Glad you asked, Joe. Glad you asked. You got the answer. And I don't begrudge him being like, wait, let me question your sources the way I'm telling people to question other people's sources. Yeah. And for those who think he's going to get canceled, maybe he canceled that guest in the future, but he did follow up with a tweet saying, if I'm going to get made to look like a fool on my own show, I'm glad it's by this bro. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I don't need to talk trash about Joe Rogan every time he comes in the news. I do feel the need to throw his own words back at him, which are like, if you say something stupid and no one says, bro, that's stupid, then you're around the wrong people. Joe Rogan has been around the wrong people for the last 2 years until this last episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and has seemingly become even more likely to bring on those wrong people over the last couple of years because he thinks it brings in the, you know, sort of committed right-wing young audience that he wants. He wants that audience. There are consequences of pursuing that audience, but a lot of people have made the decision that the money and the fame that they will get off of getting that sort of audience over the past few years is more important than any sort of ethical obligation.
I think the ethos of his viewers are body hackers. They're just like body hackers. That's what it is.
Well, I think it's body hackers, but it's the desire to seem as if your news is cooler. I get cooler, edgier, independent news, whether that's coming off of some, you know, QAnon, Telegram, or 4chan, or maybe Joe Rogan. It's better than all those sheeple that get news from reputable places or whatever. Okay, but we only have 5 minutes for this, so let's jump into this last story. The most serious charge so far being levied against someone involved in the insurrection of January 6th has now come out. Stuart Rhodes, one of the leaders of the Oath Keepers, as well as a number of other individuals from the Oath Keepers, are now facing an indictment by a federal grand jury. Was arrested actually yesterday morning. In total, 19 people were charged in 3 separate indictments. 11 of the individuals faced seditious conspiracy charges, while the rest faced counts of corruptly obstructing an official proceeding and other related charges. And so we got a lot of information we're gonna give you. Just understand one thing. For the last year or so, as more and more charges started to come out of, you know, various either misdemeanors or felonies or whatever, the right had often defended themselves saying, well, nobody's getting charged for sedition or whatever. And so you might think, game changer, a leader of the Oath Keepers, a militia, is being charged with sedition. Well, instantaneously, Fox News' Mark Levin said, it's still not an insurrection. Nobody's been charged with conspiracy to overthrow the government. So like the sedition isn't enough then. And if they get charged with conspiracy to overthrow the government, it'll be something else. Those seditious goalposts just keep on moving.
It's like, dude, Mark Levin knew this was coming, so he got out the night before and started digging around the goalposts. He's like, I'm just gonna get ahead of it. I'm gonna move them a little bit more. Because they're this whole side of the political spectrum that says it's all about facts and thinking and discourse and free speech. They only care about the conclusion. Their conclusion first. These folks, this guy's being charged, and I don't know if it's a specific guy, but like with using weapons to try to overthrow the government. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Now you should have everything. Like you can't just looking at them storming the Bastille, mm-hmm. and hitting, you know, windows and breaking windows and shooting off fire extinguishers and storming the floors of Congress, like. That's enough. Yelling, I want to kill, hang Mike Pence, people having bats and whatnot. Like they went and stormed it.
Yeah.
I don't need them to be like misguided. I don't need to figure that out. They did these things that are illegal. Like this is another point that's worth making is like, it is terrifying that we're at this point where we're arguing whether them doing this thing, that's something that hasn't happened like this since they burned down the original White House. Like, mm-hmm. Like we're in this point where we're having this discussion. It's really bad. This is really terrible. And what's more disheartening is the specific individuals who've been spending every day since this happened trying to convince us it was normal.
Exactly. And not anything you need to worry about, because getting them to not be afraid is a prerequisite for gearing up for the next one. Or the legal version of it, where you just control all the secretaries of state and you don't even have to storm the building anymore. You are certainly not trying to downplay it because you're seriously worried about it happening again. That doesn't make any sense. Well, a little bit more information about Mr. Rhodes. On election day, he said that an honest count of the votes could only result in a victory for Mr. Trump, and called on members of his group to, quote, stock up on ammo and prepare for a full-on war in the streets. Seems a bit scary. Let's see, he'd said 2 days after the election, we aren't getting through this without a civil war. Too late for that. Prepare your mind, body, spirit. On November 7th, when Mr. Biden was declared the winner, he said, we must now do what the people of Serbia did when Milosevic stole their election, refused to accept it, and march en masse on the nation's capital. And in the actual indictment, they have information about their purchase of weapons and their going to DC and all that stuff. Again, it doesn't matter what they said. It doesn't matter what they did. It will never convince those who are in the midst of trying to overthrow the next election preemptively are never going to be convinced by that. They're never going to be sufficiently worried about some line being crossed democratically or in terms of norms. So we don't report on this because we believe anything like that. But it is important that you understand who the Oath Keepers are, understand the danger posed by some of these radical militias. You know, whether it has the effect that it should in some hypothetical rational country or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, John, well, I spent so much time trying to wrap it up for you guys. And then when I just wait and allow you to finish a segment, suddenly it's like, oh, here's an awkward pause Brett created.
I was giving you a chance to talk and I can fill the time because you know what? We've gotten lots of comments from our awesome audience. Let's see, Danny Allen over on Twitch subscribed. I care about recognizing Danny Allen, but Brett would rather we just vamp.
I'm just looking at Macetron doing 17 months on tier one saying some what? People say cucumbers taste better pickled. And yeah.
That's funny. 17 months, wow, look at that. Shikingo hit 11 months, Bent Medic hit 6, thank you. CD Weatherly hit 4 months, says, hey guys, writing in from MI, there was another school shooter incident the next district over from us. Luckily, he never actually fired and was caught. It's just the new normal, at least 34 shootings last year. How are some people just okay with this? Yeah, like that is like three tiers below getting national attention at this point. Like, if he didn't fire a bullet, I mean, he just intended to kill everyone. That's not going to get news, but sorry to hear about that. Okay, that's all the time we have for our linear platforms. Twitch and YouTube, though, we got a lot more news, including the throwing away of garbage. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.